Today's Minnesota Reads is made possible by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com. Joining us on the phone this morning is Dr. Brenda Child. She is the author of a book called My Grandfather's Knocking Sticks. Brenda, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Your book is a fascinating mix of a couple of genres, in a sense, that we don't necessarily think of going together. On the one hand, it's an examination, a bit of a scholarly examination of work and unemployment and labor history among the Ojibwe people at the beginning of the 20th century. And on the other hand, it's a very personal memoir and a very personal story about your relatives. Tell us where the genesis of this idea came from.
Right. Well, I'm a historian, and so I tend to work like historians and archives and have a kind of traditional approach in that way. But I became really interested in writing this book about Ojibwe family life or labor history is sort of what I was interested in primarily. I became very interested in the reservation of my grandparents' generation. So I was thinking about folks who lived and raised their family and really survived in the early 20th century, in some ways a time that's very different from our own. They were folks who lived under circumstances, I think, of miserable poverty, and they lived a life maybe different from their own parents or grandparents, apart from their former lives of economic self-sufficiency, a time when there was really more freedom for Ojibwe people. So I decided to go ahead and try to write a labor history, what people were doing to make a living on the reservation. But I happened to go into some records kept by the Indian Agency at Red Lake, and I found my own grandparents' files. So I was intending to sort of write an introduction to this book that was kind of personal, talking about my grandparents' lives. And then I suddenly had all this material, so I ended up writing two chapters because all of a sudden I knew lots more information about how they lived in the early 20th century.
In addition to learning more about how they lived, some of those records must have been extremely painful to read. You talk a little bit about how, or you demonstrate in so many ways of how the Bureau of Indian Affairs, for example, was just in every aspect, trying to control every aspect of people's lives. And I was curious for you as a historian, what do you do when you're studying history, but it's real, it's personal, and it hurts?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that for people who are native scholars, this is something that, not that you ever get used to it, but it is something familiar to us. So my first book was about native people and government boarding schools, and it was kind of based on letters that students and family members wrote in the early 20th century, the period that I study. And so I think I'm familiar with that era, which really is an era of forced assimilation, forced acculturation. But what's always sort of inspiring to me when you get down and you look into the archive very closely and you're able to see their letters, their words, their thoughts, it's incredible to me how determined Ojibwe people were to keep their families together, keep their communities together, and to survive. So I think that balances out the tough aspects of the story, but I was still somewhat shocked to see how intrusive Indian agents were on the reservation, because we can talk about this sometimes from the perspective of federal policy, right, that we know what the policies were as historians. But how did people on the ground live and experience these things? For example, I found that the Indian agent wrote about my grandmother's first two pregnancies. So that's a level of intrusion that I hadn't really expected.
And you mentioned too that let's call it editorial comments,
right,
about people, their character, conclusions drawn. And that, too, must have been very hurtful, not only to know that these things were said, and in many instances unfairly, but that they were written down for other people to read.
I think that gives us some insight into what reservation life was like, what life was like in the United States for American Indians in the early 20th century. And when I look at disparaging comments, in some cases about my own grandparents as I was reading these files, sometimes Indian agents said very positive things about them, you know, good people, good family people, that sort of thing. But there was always this undertone, because their job was to sort of change the way that Native people were doing things. They wanted them to speak English. They wanted them to conform. They wanted them to get married in Christian church services. They wanted Indians to work and to labor in a certain kind of way. And so, yeah, so that's very present in the archive, that attitude about Native people. There's always something that needs to be changed, always some ways in which Native people are lacking.
Talk a little bit, just briefly touch on this idea that is beginning to gain, I hate to use the phrase, it's beginning to gain a little traction, where Native scholars in particular try to go back and try to take a second look at history, in many instances a first look, at the history of Native people and bring the indigenous people's perspective to accounts of history.
Right. Well, I think I'm sort of part of that generation of, I was an undergraduate at Bemidji State University and graduated from there in the early 80s. And so even before I went to graduate school, I had a sort of foundation in American Indian Studies, which is an important part of the curriculum there at UMD and also on the Twin Cities campuses. But when I went to graduate school, I found that there weren't really American Indian history wasn't really considered a legitimate field of study. And so a lot of us who then had gone to college of that generation and were seeking doctorates and trying to get into the academy, we found that our stories and the stories of our families and communities in our history hadn't really been told. And so it was our desire to really put in Native perspectives into history and to really examine the history of this country from the perspective of Native people. And so we talk a lot about these days these kind of theories of settler colonialism, that there were many things that Native people, not just in the United States but Canada, across the Pacific, indigenous peoples and other parts of the world had in common because of this settler colonialism, that there were it was a very difficult system that Native people were negotiating as they were settled onto reservations, as they negotiated treaties, as they lived on the reservations of the early 20th century. But to really try to find oral histories, documents where Native people are telling that side of the story, that's something that we haven't really heard from before.
Brenda, I was also particularly moved, I guess, when the book changed focus, and it does this seamlessly from these large issues about, you know, ideas about assimilation and some of these large cultural issues to these very small personal issues that are independent of color or time in history. And you talked about a gift that you received in learning these things about your grandparents and how you came to appreciate how their lives shaped yours, and you're still discovering how their lives shaped yours. Do you think that that is a gift or an insight that's available to everyone, or did it only come out of that, you know, perhaps that particular situation, going through those particularly hard times?
Yeah. I guess I would say, kind of in response to that, you know, when I think of the way that I do history, in some ways, I've always been the kind of person, maybe a little bit different from some of my colleagues, because I've always been very interested in the personal stories, the very human stories, the everyday way in which people live their lives. And for me, I can only kind of get at the big picture from looking at the day-to-day lives of people. So that's sort of my approach to the study of history. So in that way, family members, relatives can all be part of that, because I'm not talking about the rich and the famous. I'm not talking about the powerful people in society. I'm talking about everyday people and how they live their lives. And so I'll just kind of give you one quick example. In the part where I move into talking more broadly about Ojibwe people and their working lives on the reservations, apart from my own family, I discovered that there was this really interesting young nurse from up in Roseau, Minnesota, who was Ojibwe, who went out to Washington, D.C., working as a volunteer nurse during the global epidemic of influenza that was all over the world at that time, that they say killed more people than World War I. And this young 18-year-old woman, I happened to find a wonderful letter, 7-page letter that she had written that was in the National Archives, and she describes her experience of being in kind of wartime Washington, working at this military hospital where people were dying every day from this terrible epidemic. And so it's people like that that I just really I admire, and I love the way they tell their stories. And when you go into archives, you find that Native people often are relating fascinating stories. And so for me, I learned a lot about from this one young nurse from Roseau named Lucient, who had been a boarding school student, and then the nurse in this flu epidemic, a lot about what that experience was like for Ojibwe people, but also for just people living in the United States at that time, because that was a terrible struggle for people.
Brenda, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I wish we had more time to talk, but I really appreciate your joining us as our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. Thanks again.
Miigwech. Thank you.
Dr. Brenda Child joined us this morning. She is the author of My Grandfather's Knocking Sticks. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and also by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street. Online at fitgersbookstore.com.